Welcome to a new edition of Gay Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hello.
Don't forget to follow us on social media at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. And, well, we've had quite a week, Lightning. But before we get into the week that has been, we are going to go on the Canadian road trip with the team as well. No, not really. Virtually through phone. Virtually. We're going to speak with Reed Wilkins, host of Inside Sports and Oilers Hockey on 630 CHED. We play Edmonton in Edmonton on the 22nd. So we thought, you know what? We don't know a lot about the Oilers as far as the team other than Connor McDavid. So let's get somebody on who does and kind of give us a, you know, because with Connor McDavid on that team, any given night, they have a chance to win.
Yeah.
No matter where they are in the standings. Mm-hmm. That kid is amazing. So kind of get an inside take.
Inside take. And we, again, we don't, you know, we don't see the Edmontons and the Calgarys
often.
The Winnipeg. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to talking to somebody that covers them on a daily basis and can tell us a little bit more than Connor David. McDavid. Hockey Jesus. What do they call him?
Connor McDavid? I don't know. But he's like everybody in the NHL calls him a generational player. And when we've seen him, he's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting to see that every night would be interesting to talk to.
They've had that whole thing with Tom McClellan getting fired. Yep. There's some really interesting things going on up there.
Right. And so, you know, we thought, why not?
Why not?
Let's take a little Canadian road trip, eh? But let's talk about the week that was.
The week that was. Why do you say it? Like, sadly.
But I'm not sad.
Okay.
I'm still, like, energized over it. Let's talk about the game.
The Toronto game?
Well, let's talk about the Ranger game on my birthday.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Steven Stamkos, for that wonderful hat trick birthday present. It was awesome.
Yeah. He's really played so dang well last couple weeks.
He has. And it's nice to see. And I think, you know, before that game versus the Rangers, they were 10-0-0 when Steven Stamkos scores in a game. Mm-hmm. And so I think not only... I don't think the team really necessarily pays attention to that because we have four lines that can score and whoever scores, great. But I think the team really feeds off of it when Steven, the captain, scores.
Yeah.
You just see how happy all the guys are for him.
And, you know, he's still just a shooter. He's a pure shooter. Mm-hmm. And I think it does kind of energize them a little bit. Yeah, he's their leader. Even when he's not scoring, he is definitely the leader of that team. It has nothing to do with, you know, the points or the scoreboard or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I think it is something because I think they all respect him.
Absolutely.
And when they see, you know, the way, and they all work together. I mean, some of these passes that these guys have been getting lately have just been gorgeous.
Yeah. And so Steven Stamkos gets a hat trick. Anthony Cirelli had two goals.
Yeah.
And then Ryan McDonagh had a goal.
Which I'm glad to see because he had a little bit of a dry spell.
Yeah.
Not taking anything away from him. Listen,
we don't expect him to score.
And I always say that, like, he's a defenseman.
Yeah.
That's not his job. His job, yeah, sure. They'll shoot the puck from way back, you know, their own blue line, and they will assist all day long, but his job's not to score. But it's awesome when they do. It's kind of a bonus.
Absolutely. It was good stuff. And then, you know, I always like it when we get a hat trick right before the holidays because I wait to buy my Christmas presents for my brother and my dad. And so, yes, every year they end up getting a Lightning hat, because if somebody gets a hat trick, they go 50% off for season ticket holders. I think it might be 35% off.
Which is still huge.
Yeah. But I missed the hat trick earlier in the season from Tyler Johnson because I left a little bit early. And so I was like, oh, we got to get another one because I need to get my hats. So, yes. So they're all getting hats for Christmas. I hope they're not listening.
Your dad probably is.
Yeah, my dad probably is. But, you know, they know every year they get a hat, whether there's a hat trick or not. Because I'm like, we need to update your hat this year. So, yeah, that was an exciting game. Just dominating. And then 2 days off.
Uh-huh.
2 or 3 days off. I have to pull it up again. So that game was Monday night and then Thursday night. So they had 2 days off.
Thursday night.
Versus Toronto. And everybody was talking about this game.
Before, it was everywhere. Everywhere you looked, everybody's like, here we go. This is it. This could be, you know, a definite preview of things to come. Number one versus number two.
And it's like a fight for first place.
Right.
Yeah. At my ride home, I listened to the NHL Network on Sirius XM. Mm-hmm. And
did they play Mike Babcock's comments about it?
Before the game or after?
After the game.
I didn't hear it.
Okay.
But I was listening the entire show, basically. Mm-hmm. Even though there were a bunch of games going on that night. That's all they were talking about. I mean, and they're out of Toronto, too. So
yeah. Well, yeah.
But it was all they were talking about.
And they're playing well this year for, you know, which is...
Toronto's, yeah, scary team.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike Babcock, after the game, was asked...
Well, let's talk about what happened at the game. Well, okay. What did Mike Babcock say?
Mike Babcock. That was a decent Mike Babcock accent.
Thank you.
He does have a different accent.
Yeah.
He said that you find out, you know, you think you're good, you see the standings, and then you go play a really good team.
And, wow.
And... It kind of like, you know, left it at that. I don't think they played horrible.
No,
I don't think
they came at us.
But I think that really was a statement game. And I know we say that a lot, but it really was. Because mm-hmm. that's their competition right now.
Right.
That team.
Absolutely.
And they were doing everything well. I believe the Lightning did.
The Toronto Maple Leafs threw everything at the kitchen sink mm-hmm. at us. Mm-hmm. At the Lightning.
And that's the thing that I think it makes the Lightning very scary if you're anybody else looking at them. Mm-hmm. Vasilevsky, got it. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that. Vasilevsky goes down for a month, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fine.
First game back. Biggest game of the year thus far.
Anton Stralman, Victor Hedman. You know, these guys go out with injury and then, nah, that's fine. It's like they just win.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Dave Andrechuk, the post game, said, you know, good teams find a way to win. And that's what the Lightning did. And I think those two goals in the second period that were 34 seconds apart right before the end of the period, I mean, that
was
really
a killer.
It killed Toronto. Mm-hmm. Even the one goal probably would have screwed them up a little bit. Yeah. But
you want to go talk about Vasi now?
I mean, can we not? I mean, let's just look at the scoring sheet, though, for the Toronto game. Anthony Cirelli. Nikita Kucherov, Alex Killorn, Tyler Johnson. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not even a Steven Stamkos on here, and mm-hmm. we still won the game. All of these guys are playing really well.
And a lot of that has to do with Vasilevsky.
All right.
Okay, what were your feelings? I wasn't sure what we were going to expect. I figured he'd be a little slow. I figured he'd be a little rusty between the pipes.
He had one full practice before this game. So I'm going, okay.
They're a good team.
Okay. Not that I think Louis Domingue is lesser, because I think he's really proven himself.
Yeah. Yep.
But I thought, okay, well, but Vasi is a Vezina finalist. So yeah. I thought, okay, well, Vasi coming back after 4 weeks without more than one full practice, probably...
Against the second best team in the East.
Right. So I think we had a shot to win the game no matter who was in net at that point. I was not expecting the 49 saves or 48 saves.
48 out of 49 saves.
From Vasilevsky.
And not only that, but the save scene around the world. I'm going to be honest with you. As I saw it, the first thing I thought of, because we're, and obviously if you guys know, we're talking about the crazy, it was just ridiculous. I don't know how he knew. I don't know what Jedi mind trick powers he had going on.
I think it's just feeling.
But he kicks the puck from backwards with his left, and then it lands, and then he takes his right leg, and he somehow tippy-toes. And I don't know how he did it. But I'll be honest, when he hit his left skate, I went, mm-hmm. because I was like, oh, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
Just let it go in.
Yeah.
Please don't.
Well, it's just like... Are you doing too much? We don't want you to get hurt again.
And that's what I was thinking. Just, you know, how stable is a fractured left foot when you've only been out not even 5 weeks?
Right. It was 4 to 6 weeks that we were told.
And it was very close to being exactly a month. November 10th was when he got the foot fracture.
Right.
Got to be careful. That was a tongue twister.
Yeah.
And I honestly was very concerned. Not that I don't have faith in Louis Domingue. I absolutely have had...
proven that. Yeah.
It's shocking how much faith I have in him. But I don't want to see anybody get hurt. Especially when you have a next caliber goalie, which is what Vasilevsky is.
Right.
He's heads and shoulders above just about, I mean, he's in
the
top
tier. Well, he's heads and shoulders about just about everybody.
Well, yeah.
He's so tall.
But, I mean, he is. He is in the upper echelon of the top tier of goaltending. And you don't want to see that, you know, something like that happen.
Yeah.
And thank
but he's
goodness
never not going to try to make that save.
Oh,
he's not
gosh.
Thinking about his body at that point. He's thinking about making the save. And there are a couple amazing saves that he made in addition that would have been highlight saves anyway. But this one was just...
I don't know how you look at the Lightning if you're 30 other teams in this league and go,
we got a chance here. You just hope Vasi has an off night.
Right.
I mean, really? You go out there and you do your best and you really try hard.
You try hard. We're gonna try.
Know.
We're gonna try really hard, and we'll have we get to play the Panthers next tomorrow night. Let's just look at it that way, fellas. I mean, I don't know how else to put. I mean, I'm being a little hyper, you know, hyperbole here. Because,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never been a professional athlete. I don't know if you can tell, but I don't know that athletes. Think
maybe,
like that?
Maybe not. But you know what? When they get on these rolls where they score these very quick, and you have to think something broke down for that to happen, and they capitalized on it, and they're taking advantage of those mistakes. And then when that happens, in your head, psychologically, if you're the other team, you have to put pressure on everybody, including yourself, like, well, we can't let up. We can't make a mistake, because that's really when Andrejczyk said good teams find ways to win, you do it by capitalizing on turnovers
mistakes.
And the Lightning have been on fire doing that this season.
There were a lot of Leafs fans there. And it felt like a playoff atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
I know we've said that before, but I know I was sitting on the edge of my seat. And, you know, that first period, they were throwing everything at us, and mm-hmm. I was like, ooh, they're really fast. I'm mm-hmm. like, they were matching our speed in that first period, and it made me quite nervous.
Sure.
You know, and them scoring first. But, you know, we've seen this season, doesn't matter if the other team scores first. And it's like, it's that not panicking thing mm-hmm. that I've seen before,
mm-hmm.
where I think other seasons, if we do get behind by a goal early, they start gripping their sticks a little too much. And they start to panic. This year, it's like, nope, we're good. We got this. It's all good. Mind-blowing. I can't say enough good things about this team. And then, you know, Anthony Cirelli gets an amazing goal. And then Alex Killorn shooting the puck makes me very happy that he's shooting the puck.
He's really played very well lately. He's under very... shush, quiet,
mm-hmm.
but he's really getting, he's doing a lot of work back there.
Yeah, and then Tyler Johnson with an amazing goal. I don't know. Let's talk about the one goal that was, that they reviewed.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and I don't remember who's, that was the Kucherov goal,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
where the goaltender Anderson caught the puck in an amazing, what it looked like, save. But I was like, wow, that arm like detached and was like way behind him. Are we going to take a look at that? And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And he caught the puck when it was already over the goal line.
Right.
So, womp, womp.
Womp, womp.
And I think that also deflated them too. You know?
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean,
can't catch a break. I mean.
And that's the thing. When you have a team that capitalizes on things mm-hmm. and they get the breaks. How many times have we sat here and been like, well, the hockey gods were not looking down on the Lightning? They've been looking down on the Lightning quite a lot this season.
But I think they've made their own breaks.
I think as well. And I think because they're doing that and doing their own, making their own way, I think it's. Seems like they're getting more of the mm-hmm. hockey god breaks.
Yeah.
When they're not.
There were a lot of weird penalties in this game, too.
Dude.
So, I want these.
And that's hard. That was hard for Toronto. 6 penalties.
Well, I thought the Lightning had some weird penalties, too. So, I kind of would like the Lightning to maybe clean up, not take as many penalties, because it made me really nervous. The fact that they're out there killing penalties back-to-back or whatever.
And then they went out, you know, I mean, there was a lot of special teams, but I think when you have a 1 and a 2 and you evenly match up, and even though it's December, these teams, you know, these guys, they play every game.
Mm-hmm.
They play all 82 games. They don't look at it and go, well, we have time. Oh, I don't care. Meh, 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 meh. They don't do that. They play every single night the schedule that's in front of them.
Yep.
And you want to play your number 2. Or you want to play the number 1. You want to play when you're, you know, that close in the standings in the same division. I mean, forget the conference. I mean, in the same division, you want to play these guys close. I think that's what a lot of that was. I think it was just really a lot of heart and a lot of grit being shown by both teams. And I think sometimes it got a little sloppy. And...
Yeah. I think, you know, we've always said, play your game.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who comes in, play your game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been another thing that we've seen a lot is that they're playing their game and they're mm-hmm. not playing down to teams.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily playing up to teams because I feel like every night they come out on the ice, most likely they're playing their game, which is a high intensity, high speed, you know, game.
Yeah.
You know, and they've fixed a lot of the things that we were questioning, like the special teams, the defense, you know, with Ryan McDonough and Eric Chernak. I mean, that kid has just been playing lights out. I'm so happy to see him playing well. I mean, what else can you say?
What else can you say?
But it's going to be interesting, the Canadian road trip, because it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one.
These are good teams. They're very good teams that they're facing. And I think that's pretty cool to have, you know, a Calgary, as they say, up there.
Yeah.
And a Winnipeg and an Edmonton, you know what I mean? These are great teams.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, you know, reemerged.
Yep.
A resurgence of Western Canada as of late.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough road trip, I think.
I think so.
But I have confidence.
Why wouldn't you?
They haven't shown me any reason why not to have any confidence.
And they are late games, remember. They start a little late on the West Coast for us. So.
I know, I'm going to be so tired because I want to see these games.
I know.
Sorry, boss. I'm a little tired. I might be sleeping at my desk or taking a little nap at lunch, but it's okay. All right. So let's take a break, and we're going to come back with our guest.
Reed Wilkins.
From the Edmonton Oilers radio broadcast. Yep.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Welcome back to Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hello.
Don't forget, you can follow us on social media at Game Miz with a Z Conduct. Dory, why don't you intro our esteemed guest today?
Yeah, very, very excited, as we spoke about in our first segment, to have him. His name is Reed Wilkins. He is the host of Inside Sports and Oilers Hockey on 630 CHED in Edmonton. Mr. Wilkins, Reed, thank you so much for joining us. We're very, very excited to have you on with us.
Well, when you said you had an esteemed guest, I almost hung up the phone.
You're like, who is that?
Assume that wouldn't have been me. But no, thanks for having me on the show. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, we really don't get the chance to talk a lot of Western Coast Western Conference hockey just because we're in Florida. So we're really looking forward to finding out a little bit more about this Edmonton team, because we only see you guys, you know,
once or twice a year.
Yeah. So could you break down for Lightning fans basically the Cliff Note version of the Edmonton Oilers, who, you know, their strengths and who they are and how they've played so far this season? Of course, everybody knows about Connor McDavid, and we're going to get to that for sure. But anything not Connor McDavid that's you could tell us about this team?
Well, I think that this year's team is really, so far, the headline is the coaching change.
Mm.
And I think also that the travel, if you wanted to break down two big stories that 5 or 10 years from now you might still be saying, hey, wasn't that the year? And yeah, that's what you would say. They started this year with a trip to Europe. They played a preseason game in Germany, and then they had a regular season game against New Jersey in Sweden, and absolutely stunk, lost 5-2, were never really in it, and then flew back to North America, lost in Boston, and I do the post-game call-in show on 630 CHED, and we were getting, well, they're going to be 0-10, they're going to be 2-8, it's going to take them 3 months to win three games, all that kind of stuff. And then they played better. They got through a tough 8-game opening stretch, over 500. Then they won a game in Nashville, which they hadn't done in a long time, and they got up to 8-4-1, and then they lost 6 of 7,
mm-hmm.
and then that's where the coaching change came. And General Manager Peter Chiarelli said that he saw some things creeping back into their game from last year's disappointing season. And he fired Todd McClellan and brought in Ken Hitchcock. And I think some of those things were, you know, just the number of dangerous scoring chances they were giving up. And the Oilers had become a team where often if something bad happened in a game, they kind of couldn't shut the door on it or move past it.
Okay.
You know, one goal might lead to two or three in a span of 5 to 10 minutes, and games were getting away from them. So Ken Hitchcock has come in. They have an excellent record under Hitchcock. They've played a lot of close games with Hitch as the coach. You know, they've got a couple overtime wins, a shootout win in St. Louis where they tied it with the goalie out in the final minute, which this is a franchise that hasn't done that a lot in their recent history. And I think under Hitchcock, there's just been that reminder about defensive play. He calls it the red zone, you know, that high danger scoring area, about packing players in there, having layers of defenders, and making the puck and attacking players have to go through a lot of Oilers defenders to get to the net. And the goaltending's been better. I mean, I know one refrain was, you know, a few weeks ago was that if Todd McClellan's getting the goaltending Ken Hitchcock got, he's probably not fired. Now, is the goaltending better just because it's playing better, or is it better because maybe Hitch's system is giving up fewer high-grade scoring chances? Probably some credence to both arguments. But Mikko Koskinen has yet to lose a home game in his Oilers career. He's 7-0 at Rogers Place, and Cam Talbot had a rough 4 or 5 weeks, but he's looked a little better since then too. So that's kind of where the Oilers are at right now. You know, a couple good spurts in the season and a really bad stretch that led to Todd McClellan getting dismissed. So we'll see if they can kind of keep it going from here.
Were you a little shocked that McClellan was held on going into this season?
No, I wasn't, because the Oilers have been through so much change over what is called here in Edmonton the decade of darkness. Now, I know we're a couple of years removed from that now. They missed the playoffs for 10 straight years, got in, and then missed again last year. And there were so many coaching changes, so many managerial changes. Bob Nicholson is, you know, the vice chair of the Oilers, the former boss of Hockey Canada, and he's, you know, he reports to one person, and that's Darryl Cates, the owner of the team. And I think Bob really was reluctant to tear it apart. And I think a lot of people within the organization thought, you know, this team is closer to the playoff year team than last year's 78-point team. So I think, you know, Nicholson thought, okay, Peter Chiarelli's been here 3 years as GM. Todd McClellan's been here 3 years as coach. I don't want to rip those guys out of their jobs again and have people coming in and I don't know if starting over is the right word, but again, kind of showing the players and the fans like, we'll never have any stability. We'll just kind of keep changing and probably keep losing. So I wasn't surprised that Todd was brought back, and they did change his entire coaching staff.
Okay.
The three assistants he had, you know, all moved on. And they brought in three new assistants, including Glenn Gullitson, who, oddly enough, was the Flames head coach last year. I don't think that's ever happened before, that a Flames head coach 1 year was an Oilers the next year. So, you know, I think they wanted to keep Todd in that role. But, you know, again, then when things started to decline this year, then Chiarelli stepped in and said, we got to make a change. And you hire Hitchcock, who used to coach Midget Triple-A in Sherwood Park, which is a bedroom community for Edmonton, so it's a bit of a homecoming for Hitch, kind of a cool story.
And he seemed very excited to get back to coaching.
Well, sorry to cut you off, but he's just he's a coaching savant. I mean, it's been his life since he was a teenager. He wanted to coach. I mean, you know, Hitch's story is pretty well known. He's not an ex-player. He's not a guy that was, you know, handed opportunities. He was a successful Midget AAA coach. He coached in the Western Hockey League in Kamloops with my colleague Rob Brown, who's our analyst on 630 CHED. And he played for Hitch in the WHL. And it was funny, when Hitchcock left Dallas at the end of last season, the word was, well, okay, he's retiring. And Rob kind of rolled his eyes and says, yeah, right, Hitch is retired, and so there's a job that he wants. And
I mean,
he'll be offered it or he'll apply for it and try to get it. The guy just absolutely loves coaching, and I know a couple Oilers players have told me, you know, he's just a hockey lifer. I mean, one player said to me, he probably just goes home and watches game film. Like, I think there is more to Hitch than that, but he just thrives on coaching, and I don't think he's one of those guys who will ever be, you know, I know he's in his mid-60s now, but I don't think he'll ever be fully retired. He'll always be consulting or mentoring coaches or doing something like that.
And from what we saw when he coached, you know, Dallas and Philadelphia, and you know, players seem to really respond to him, and they seem to really respect him. They seem to like playing for him. Has that been one of the differences? I'm not saying anything negative about Todd McClellan. I've never heard, you know, a player say anything negative about him. But is it maybe just his style that's also kind of connecting with the players in Edmonton right now?
You know, and I love how you put that, because every franchise goes through coaching changes. I mean, I guess except the New England Patriots and San Antonio Spurs, right? Like every team has usually a couple of decades, even if they're good. And Todd did a lot for this team, and that's what I always say to listeners too. I mean, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. Todd McClellan was nominated for Coach of the Year. He didn't start coming into work after that and say, "Well, I'm just going to do the opposite because, you know, I know what works. I'm going to see if this, you know, like." He did a lot for the team, and he brought the team a lot. And Hitch said in an interview the other day, he goes, you know, a lot of great things were in place with Todd. I do think it's one of the cliches that's a bit true. Sometimes you just need a different voice delivering the same message in a different way, or just focusing on little things. You know, maybe emphasizing things a little bit differently, probably. You know, just making sure that the players are being accountable, getting that across in a different way. You know, Hitch hasn't come in and reinvented hockey. He did a little Q&A with some of the Philly writers when they were in town for the game on Friday, and he said, and I found this really interesting. Hitch said that sometimes pregame preparation can be a little overrated. That he's often taking the tactic where, okay, the day after a game, let's sit down and review the key moments or mistakes or good things from the previous night's game and show it on video and give feedback that way. Okay, here's what happened on this play. You would have done this and you would have done this, or what were you thinking here? And he has found that, at least to this point with the Oilers, more valuable than, you know, maybe talking a lot about the next opponent or doing things like that. And plus, he hasn't had a lot of practice time. I mean, the Oilers haven't had a lot of practice days because of the travel. We know about the CBA days off, where sometimes they just have to get a day off with some of the Oilers' flights. You know, a lot of times just a flight, especially to an eastern city, will count as a work day, so they may not get to skate. So I found that really interesting, that because we all, you know, assume coaches, you know, go in there and draw up the X's and O's for the upcoming opponent and then knock over a few water coolers to get the team fired up. I don't think that's been Hitch's approach. I think it's been more taking the teachable moments from the previous game and showing that to the players in terms of what they should be doing.
All right, one more thing about Ken Hitchcock, and then we're going to move on. By the way, we are talking to Reed Wilkins, who's the host of Inside Sports and Oilers Hockey on 630 Chet in Edmonton. You brought up, excuse me, Mikko Koskinen earlier. Did you? And how well he has played. He has really, really played well. Would you, and you alluded to the fact that Hitchcock's more, you know, his defensive scheme may have worked a little bit, you know, into his favor. And there was never really a goaltending controversy, would you say, at Edmonton at any point of this season? Or am I kind of misinterpreting it, and there may have been?
No, I don't think so, because it's been really fascinating to watch Koskinen, and Peter Chiarelli, the GM of the team, is really, I mean, even now the team's doing better. He's not very popular with the fans because of some of the trades and some of the good players that have, you know, wound up in other markets through various means, and some of the replacements that he's brought in haven't been as good. So when he added Mikko Koskinen in the summer, you know, I mean, I'm sure you guys have been through it, the players the Lightning have added. Sometimes you're just like, okay, we'll see, right? Like, what
right,
else?
Right.
He's been in the KHL for 7 years.
Right.
He's played four NHL. It's like, well, how can you really give a scouting report then? And the goaltending numbers in the KHL are so good because there's less attacking, there are fewer shots, it's a lower scoring league. So you're kind of like, okay, what does that mean for the NHL? I gotta. This is the only way I can put it, and it's gonna sound a little mean spirited, but it's the only way I can put it. When Mikko Koskinen played his first preseason game against the Calgary Flames, he looked like a man who had never played goal before.
Ooh,
like I'm serious. Like the pucks, he couldn't find the puck. He's getting beat on weak goals. If he did stop it, he had no idea where the rebound was going. And we're all like, my God, $2.5 million for this guy? He doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. He got a little better in the preseason. And I think the reason there was no goaltending controversy was because for the first 8 games, he didn't play.
Okay.
They just didn't feel comfortable putting him in. So Talbot got them through that first 8-game stretch at 4-3-1, which was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
The travel and some of the opponents that they played. And then Koskinen beat Nashville. And then as we went into November, he was outplaying Talbot. And perhaps if there was a downfall, I said if Todd gets better goaltending, maybe he's still the coach. But he was sort of reluctant to just give Koskinen, okay, you're going to start four of these five. He was always kind of going back to Talbot. Talbot couldn't get a win. He had a personal 6-game losing streak. And Talbot wasn't playing poorly. He wasn't letting in bad goals, but he wasn't making that stop. You know, like, yeah, of course, sometimes a guy's going to put it off the post and in, but if a guy stops it, you never know that shot was that high quality. He just makes the save, and Koskinen was making all those saves. So I wouldn't say there was ever really a goaltending controversy. I think as of right now, Koskinen's going to get the bulk of the starts because he's played better. So
sure.
It's pretty, you know, it's still pretty obvious that he's playing better. Now, having said that, there's still a we'll see factor for Koskinen for me because he's never carried the load in the NHL for an entire season. You know, he's never had to play games in February and March where it could be the difference between being in a playoff spot or out of a playoff spot, you know, down the final stretch of the season. So it's been fascinating to watch that, but I wouldn't say there's ever been a goaltending controversy because Koskinen pretty much clearly pushed past, you know, Talbot over the last 4 or 5 weeks.
And if you do have any, you know, if he does take any bit of a downturn, you do have Cam Talbot, who I honestly, I've always liked him as a goaltender. I think he's, I don't know if he's ever going to, you know, maybe blow anybody away, if that's a fair thing to say, but I do think he's a very solid goaltender.
Well, I think he is too. And, you know, he played a really good game in St. Louis when they got outplayed early and fell behind through no fault of him. And then he shut the door the rest of the way and Edmonton came back to win. And then, you know, the game, they beat Minnesota 7-2, and sure, you can say, well, it was 7-2, but, I mean, you know, there's moments in the game where it's, you know, it was 3-1 Oilers, and the Oilers didn't play that well, and Minnesota's getting chances, and Cam stopped them from getting back in there. I think, you know, it's funny, if you mention controversy, here's the decision with the goaltending that I think is probably going to be more hotly debated and could perhaps lead to some controversy, if you want to call it that. Both goaltenders are free agents in the summer, okay?
Ooh.
So let's say Koskinen emerges as the clear number one. Are you going to try? Is he going to re-sign before the end of the season? You know, do you want to in February and March say, okay, Mikko, you want us to be your goaltender? And is he going to say, yeah, great, having a fun time in Edmonton. I'm fifth in save percentage, so I'm going to see what I can get in the summer, right? And then what is Talbot going to want to do? Because he's also a free agent. Maybe he's sitting there thinking, okay, I know I can play in the NHL, but I'm not going to be the number one in Edmonton, so I'm not going to re-sign, because you'd think they would want one of these guys locked up before they're going to free agency. So I think looking ahead, that could be a really big story about the goaltending at Edmonton, because what if you have neither of these guys on July 1st signed, right? Then you're scrambling for a goalie again.
Well, Reed, you may be playing goalie. I don't know. Who knows? All right, so Reed, we're going to take a quick break and be back with more Game Misconduct.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Welcome back to Game Misconduct. I'm CT here with Dory.
Hello.
Don't forget, you can follow us on social media at Game Misconduct. And we're speaking with Reed Wilkins, host of Inside Sports and Oilers Hockey on 630 CHED in Edmonton. Hey, Reed, if people want to read more, are you on social media, Twitter or anything, so people can follow you?
I am on Twitter. My handle is simply my name, R-E-I-D, and then Wilkins like Dominique. I'm not one of those people that tweets out what I had for breakfast or what movie I'm going to. It's about my Twitter account is about 98% on the Edmonton Oilers and Edmonton Eskimos. Our station also broadcasts the CFL games for the Eskimos, and then the other 2% might be the odd comment about Def Leppard or craft beer. But it's a pretty broadcast focused account.
Okay, respectable. It's respectable. You know, I don't necessarily need to know what you had for breakfast. That's a cool. I mean, you know. So let's talk. So we talked about Ken Hitchcock and the coaching change and the goaltenders up there. Let's talk about Connor McDavid, who I just told you off air that I would sell my firstborn to have him on a team. I don't have any kids, so it's safe. You know, we're not going to be selling kids. That's okay. Don't freak out. But let's talk about this guy, because earlier in our show I said that anytime that guy's on your team on the ice, you have a chance to win the game, regardless of what the rest of the team does. This kid makes magic. So kind of just, you see him more than we do, but just kind of give us the rundown of what it's like to watch him play almost every night and what kind of player he, you know, because we only see
highlights.
So kind of just enlighten us a little bit on the Connor McDavid factor.
I would call McDavid the most potent offensive weapon in the NHL.
Wow.
And I know there's other great players, but for me, the thing that separates McDavid, and you know, look, he may or may not win the scoring race. I get it. Other guys get points. There are guys, obviously, who shoot the puck better and are going to have more goals, so he still has a pretty good shot. I think the best example I can give about him is I believe it was the game against Minnesota, the game they won 7-2. The Wild were forechecking, and McDavid was down low in a support backchecking position, and the puck kind of squirted out of the corner, and his first touch of the puck on the play was right at the bottom of the circle in his own end. And I remember talking to Rob Brown, our analyst, during the intermission, because we'll break down the highlights for the period. And we both said as soon as he touched the puck, we knew it was going to be a 3-on-2 with a scoring chance, and it turned into a goal. Because he is so fast, and he can turn from defense to offense so quickly that on that play particular, you could see where he got the puck. I mean, there was a Wild forechecker higher up than him, but who was stationary, so you know he's going to beat that guy. Then you know it's a 3-on-2 against the two defensemen, and Draisaitl goes to the net and gets a pass and scores. To me, there are a lot of exciting things about McDavid. You know, he sees passing lanes. He has a really powerful wrist shot. He wins most puck battles. He's very, very strong on the puck. You know, not only is it hard to take it away from him, he can strip it off other players very well. But I think, to me, that's the most breathtaking thing about watching him, is that you can see with him offensive plays developing when he gets the puck, oftentimes deep in his own end, because he's so fast and he's so aware of what's going on.
The other thing about Connor McDavid, I think, that maybe doesn't get that we appreciate in Tampa Bay, because we have Steve Stamkos, who came, you know, was drafted very, very young, as was Connor McDavid. In fact, CT and I covered the draft in Sunrise that he was drafted, and it was absolutely bonkers when he got drafted. I mean, the press room afterwards, it was insane. It was, you think Wayne Gretzky had just entered the build. It was just, I've never seen anything like that for a hockey player before. But he also seems to have accepted the fact that he is the leader, and that he is, you know, it's a lot of pressure on him. And he seems to have handled that aspect as well. Is that a fair statement to say?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And the thing about McDavid and some of these, hockey prodigies, especially the Canadian ones, and I know there are parts of the United States where hockey's pretty big, but, I mean, it's coast to coast in Canada.
Yeah.
So a lot of these kids have been handling this since they've been 7, 8, 9 years old. Certainly McDavid, certainly Stamkos. So they've had to learn that professionalism and that maturity, basically since they were probably before they hit double digits in age, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're the best player on the team. How you act is going to dictate maybe how your teammates act. How you act is going to dictate how you're viewed when you go to play bantam hockey and then junior hockey and then into pro. So, I think for sure Stamkos would have gone through that, Tavares and McDavid and all these players. And I know when McDavid was a rookie, Rob and I would do our call-in show after games, and people would say, now he's going to be in a man's league. Can he handle being targeted? Can he handle being checked? And Rob would always say, Rob played with Mario Lemieux, too, so you got to remember that. And Rob was an incredible high-scoring junior and the type of player in the WHL who would have been a target for checking from other players. And he always said, yeah, you know what, there's a ton he's going to have to learn about the NHL and checking and the grind and the day-to-day stuff. But he said, in terms of being targeted, you got to remember, Connor McDavid, since he was 6 years old, has been hearing parents of the other team yelling out, go kill that
right.
baby.
Yeah.
Right? So that's part of being the superstar. Is I really think as those players age, because they're there's a lot of talented, really young hockey players in Canada, but I think it's the mental ability plus the physical ability that really allows the McDavids and the Stamkoses of the world to emerge, because not only do they have the physical skill, they have the focus to go to practice and say to themselves, okay, I already know I'm the best player on the ice, but that doesn't matter. What can I personally still get better at? I mean, Crosby's known for that, right? For finding little details in his game and working on them at practice, whether it's just spinning out of the corner or getting better at his face-offs like he did a few years ago. And I think that's the category that McDavid in. He doesn't come to the rink saying, okay, I'm really good at all this, and I'll just kind of keep working on the things I'm good at. Find things you're not good at and try to become the most well-rounded hockey player you can, and then on top of that, deal with all the expectations of the fans. Because, these guys that go first overall, I'm not saying it's easy to deal with those expectations or the harassment from, the other team's fans or all the media demands, but I think they accept that as part of the job and realize that's the price to some extent they have to pay to be considered the best in the world. And that's what I see from McDavid. And I got to interview his mom a couple of years ago when he signed the big contract extension, and she said, he's an old soul. And I really think that is Connor. He's still a young man, but he's got a bit of that old soul to him where, he's publicly, he's very reserved. He says the right things in interviews. He's incredibly supportive of his teammates. So all the hockey skill is one thing, but he has the personality and the willpower to handle all the stuff when he's not on the ice as well.
Well, he's definitely a difference maker, and it's always fun to see him when we get to see him that one time a year in Tampa Bay. And so our teams meet the end of this week. The Lightning, they just came off last week, a really great game against Toronto, and it was high energy and everybody was talking about it. Kind of give us an idea of what you think, we're going to see from the Oilers against the Lightning and how that matchup will go.
I think it's a massive test for the Oilers. I know they have a great record under Hitchcock. They've pushed right up there in the Pacific Division and actually, the division as a whole is doing better than I thought it would, but they've pushed right up there. This is going to be a massive test for the Oilers because Tampa Bay's the cream of the crop. Speaking of McDavid, they have a deep enough defense core that they can roll out a couple pairings that can really challenge McDavid and get on him. And and the Oilers don't have a lot of depth scoring. You know, even though they've been winning lately, it's a lot of low scoring games, and depth scoring is still a weakness on the team. The Oilers are going to be challenged on defense with Klefbom out. We'll see if Chris Russell is back for that game. I doubt it. So they're going to have probably a couple younger guys in the lineup and other players, you know, still dealing with increased responsibilities. So I think this is a massive test for the Oilers. You know, I think if they go out there and lose by three or four goals on Saturday, then, yeah, the narrative in Edmonton might be like, okay, well, great, you know, still not good enough to really take on the best teams. If it's a close game, it's a competitive game, if the Oilers are right in there or get the win, then I think that's going to be a bit of a milestone game for the Oilers, because Tampa Bay is so good. Tampa Bay beat them fairly convincingly when they played in November. I know maybe if Vasilevskiy doesn't stop Ty Ratty with his head, maybe it's a different game. But I think that is – I hesitate to use the word statement games, because, you know, you play 82 in the NHL.
Right.
You don't want to put too much on it. But I think if that's a game where the Oilers really – really hang in there and get a win or you know, take it down to the final minute and show they can play with the Lightning, I think that's going to go a long way towards the Oilers' confidence and how they're perceived by their fans.
Well, it should be a really exciting game. I always look forward to seeing these two teams match up. But before we let you go, because we want to let you get on with your day, we want to ask you about the Seattle expansion team, because it will affect your division when that team drops the puck on their first season. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think Seattle's going to be a good hockey city. Long history there. I mean, I know there probably aren't any fans around from their Stanley Cup team, but... But they maintained a pretty good hockey tradition with the Western Hockey League. I know I got to interview a reporter with King 5 in Seattle when it was nailed down that they got the team. He said there's tons of people playing rec hockey and
yeah,
minor hockey, and it's still a big part of the community. It'll be nice to balance out the divisions and the conferences. And the interesting thing about Seattle joining is I think that the Seattle fans are going to see Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary as more rivals,
yeah,
regionally than they do as the California teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's another quicker road trip for the Oilers, which is never a bad thing. So I'm really interested to see how it goes. I think they'll get a decent roster with as they're going to have the same expansion rules as Vegas. I mean, a lot of, you know, Canadians, a lot of Albertans, that's a fairly short trip to go, you know, holidays there, or now go to see your hockey team there. It's only about a couple hour flight. It's a beautiful city. Obviously, they won't be as cold in December, January as it is in Edmonton. Though I know they can get a little bit down there. But yeah, I think it's good. You know, obviously you can raise all the questions about, well, more diluted talent and all that kind of stuff. Well, fair enough. But I mean, the other owners are going to like the expansion fee, and I think it'll be a good city here for the little northeast loop in the NHL. Northwest, pardon me.
Well, Reed, thank you so much for joining us today, and I look forward to seeing our teams match up later this week.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So that was our guest, Reed Wilkins, host of Inside Sports and Oilers Hockey on 630 CHED in Edmonton. You can follow him at Reed Wilkins on Twitter if you want to get some more insight from him on, what do you say, craft beer?
Well, not really. Just 2% craft
2%
beer.
2% craft beer and Def Leppard.
Yes.
And then the rest of it's Edmonton hockey,
yeah.
Edmonton Oilers hockey, and I guess they're... their minor league
the
team.
Eskimos.
The Eskimos.
Edmonton Eskimos. I think that's awesome.
So great having him on, getting some insight on a team that we don't see often, mm-hmm, but has a superstar, next generational player on their roster. So and the goaltending thing is interesting.
Very.
I would not want to be an Edmonton Oiler fan once free agency opens up.
No, I mean, it's really scary. We don't have to, you know, worry about that here.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has been through. They've been through a lot. And
right,
it's very interesting to see the dynamic since, or to hear about the dynamic, I guess, since Ken Hitchcock took over.
Yeah.
And he is one of the most, I think, respected and beloved coaches in the NHL. But just to see the way it's all kind of coming together for him. Because, listen, they were struggling a little bit in the neutral zone. They,
mm-hmm,
were struggling a little bit in their defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why they weren't playing well in the beginning of the year. And they seem to have kind of gotten that,
mm-hmm,
a little... they don't have a lot of... I can say they don't have a lot of speed on their wings.
Mm.
And that's also hurting them. But when you have a player like McDavid,
right,
he gets to cover a lot of those glaring weaknesses right. to make them look, well, they could work on that.
Right. And that's not a team that has no. really more than one line that can score,
yeah.
maybe two.
Yeah.
And then
I
you look at us and we've got four lines that are scoring.
Right.
And you think of the how they match up. And
listen, you can't have Connor McDavid on the ice for 60 minutes.
Right. You can't.
And
I'm sure he'd love to be.
You know, and they did make some acquisitions in the offseason that haven't. They have Milan Lucic, who we all know.
Yep. From Boston.
And maybe not love. No offense to him. I'm sure he's lovely. But that's not really worked out.
Yeah.
And they're paying him a decent amount of money not to work out.
And then Taylor Hall went to New Jersey.
Ugh, which I'm sure,
you know, that was tough.
Everybody knew New Jersey was going to be the winner in that one.
Yeah.
And we've seen it.
Yeah.
Taylor Hall.
Is amazing.
Has been something special. And he's always been a good hockey player.
Right.
So,
and then they lost Eberle.
Yeah.
They've gone through some growing pains, but still dangerous. Anytime you've got a next generational player like Connor McDavid on the ice, but you kind of see, I mean, we are in a very special situation.
Oh.
Most teams do not have four lines that can score on any given night. They have one or two.
Mm.
And then they've got one and maybe two defensive pairings that can really be matched up against the top players on that team. Just think of
four
that.
Is being generous.
Four,
yeah. Four is being generous.
Yeah, maybe three defensive players.
But yeah, but
mostly one. One really good defensive pairing.
Yeah.
So you think of that, and then you think of what we have, where it's just, we're very fortunate here in Tampa Bay.
The cup runneth over.
Don't even say the word cup
around
me. Well,
I didn't mean that cup. I mean, just, you know.
Yeah. A cup.
A cup.
You know. A turvis.
A turvis? There we go.
A turvis runneth over.
We'll see. There we go. Dude, that's a CD. Kill me.
You know, it's just, it's getting to that point where it's like, let's not jinx it. You know?
But I really, we said it with Matt Salmon last week. We said it the week before.
With Brian Burns.
Brian Burns. December is when you show who you are.
And this Canadian road trip is gonna be a nice test. Because it's a lot of travel.
It's
playing later at night.
The thing is, and I was thinking about this when Reed was talking about the travel to Edmonton, and they've had a lot. It's been crazy.
Gosh.
I would think it has to be, time-wise, and how the way time zones and things work, it's got to be easy to go from Florida to Alberta, Canada, than it is to go from Alberta to Florida.
Yeah.
Because you're gaining hours.
Right.
When the Lightning have a Western Canadian road trip, they're gaining hours.
Right.
Maybe they're not. You know, real hours, but
right.
And then when you're coming from Alberta and you're coming to Tampa Bay, you're losing hours.
Yeah.
So there's something to math. There's some math to think about.
Yeah, but their body clocks are saying, oh, a game would normally be over right now.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But they're starting a game at 10
true.
O'clock Eastern time.
And it's not that awful. It's not one of those wacky trips where they're like zigzagging.
Yeah,
it's
no,
really
it makes,
just right there.
It makes sense.
It's a nice little Western Canadian.
Yeah, and just imagine, you know, 3 years from now, 2 years from now, they'll be adding a Seattle stop in
there. I would think so.
Yeah. So some really great things to look out for when we match up against the Edmonton Oilers at the end of this week. Let's talk about the holidays, because they're upon us. Whatever you celebrate, Festivus, you know, Christmas.
Sure.
So we're going to be off next week, but that doesn't mean Lightning power play stops. Oh, no. They'll be replaying wins, which... Our turvis runneth over.
It could start Friday for all we know. I mean,
there's so many wins.
Thousands of wins.
We don't have to stop.
But it's been quite a winful season.
Yeah, so we'll be off next week, which is Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
But we will be back on New Year's Eve with a brand new show.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you, listen to the wins while you're trying to ignore and hide from your family. Because, you know, everybody's got that Aunt Edna.
Yep.
That leaves lipstick marks on your cheeks. So, make sure you check out Lightning Power Play to relive some of those amazing games and wins. And then we'll be back, like we said, with the brand new show on New Year's Eve to ring in 2019 and kick off really the second half of, you know, I don't know if it's the halfway point technically, but, you know, we really kind of see the cream rise to the top. After December.
When we come back, after a week off, when we come back, we will know who is who.
We'll be able to sniff out the posers.
I feel like that old Dennis Green, RIP, that old Dennis Green, you know, they was who we thought they were. Like,
oh, okay. I don't get that reference. Oh. You're older than me, so it's fine.
Yeah.
I like to remind you of that every chance I get. All right, so we'll catch you next. Well, actually, it won't be next year. The eve of next year on with a brand new show. Please have a happy and safe holiday. Hug your friends and your family and your Aunt Edna.
And be safe.
And be safe. We'll catch you next time on Game Misconduct. Don't forget, follow us on social media at Game Mis with a Z Conduct.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.